you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 204 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tiber, your host. Today, my guest is Susan Reynolds. Susan is the owner and CEO of a company called De Novo Service of Process. And what a company started out as a national-based vendor providing service of process to attorneys and law firms around the country, it's kind of morphed into something more than that. They certainly do service of process and do so very efficiently and with a great deal of automation now. But they also have a referral directory aspect to their business. Because they're in contact with so many attorneys from around the country, it seemed to be a natural extension of what they do. And it's kind of interesting to find like a commercial entity that's providing referrals opportunities for the legal market. And who knows? I think maybe that might be a fertile area moving forward for continued growth, because I think we all have experience with, say, our bar associations or, you know, other association type activities, listservs and the like, that provide the opportunity to do referrals. But and then in some cases, there's paid referral networks that have some good points and bad points about them. But something like this, a commercially based referral network database that you can access on your own and find what you're looking for in terms of an attorney in a specific jurisdiction who does a specific type of law might be something that you're interested in. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have Susan on with us today. So I hope you get something out of this. And without any further delay, here's Susan Reynolds. Susan Reynolds, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. Nice chatting with you.
Well, on this, what turns out to be a cold and rainy day here in the Washington, D.C. area, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
I will. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And where I am, I'm looking out my window right now. It's a beautiful sunny day. A couple clouds in the sky, but I'm in South Florida.
So, rub it in, why don't you?
Oh, it's beautiful here. I wake up every day to this. It's a blessing, believe me. How did I get here? That's a good question. Well, unlike your interview with Jordan Harbinger, who I just listened to a little bit, great interview, I knew I wanted to be a lawyer since I was about 14 or 15. Uh-huh. It was my passion, it was my goal. And I wasn't always the best student, but I was the best, kind of like Jordan, at figuring out how to get where I needed to go. So, you know, I set out with my goal of becoming a lawyer. I set out taking pretty much the easiest classes I could take, getting the highest grade I could in college, getting into law school. I went to University of Baltimore and making friends with the smartest people there. And yeah, there were a lot of really smart ones. I really enjoyed listening to his podcast because it brought back a lot of memories. Just, you know, knowing how to kind of navigate through law school was somewhat of a challenge, but, you know, I had a lot of good friends and I still have a lot of friends from law school. And so I graduated in 1983. And then after that, you know, I started looking for a job and I wasn't in the top 10% of the class. I wasn't in the top 20% of the class. Yeah. And it was really hard to find a job. I had a lot of interviews, but I just didn't have a lot of yeses. So I started my own practice in Towson, and I took a lot of work from seasoned attorneys who didn't really, you know, criminal cases, domestic cases, the lower level things that they didn't want to do. So that's kind of how I got started.
It's not an unusual story. A lot of folks have gone through the same pathway. It's one of my biggest complaints about law school that, you know, your path is oftentimes set after one semester. You know, if you're like me and, you know, got off to a bit of a rough start the first semester, it's almost impossible to catch back up in terms of grade point average and making it to that coveted, as you said, 5 or 10% of the class, which is a shame because, you know, the law school is a completely different beast than undergrad school or, you know, a lot of other types of educational situations. So I think you share an experience with a lot of people in terms of almost having their hand forced to being, you know, going into solo practice.
Yeah, definitely. I wish I realized that back then. It just seemed like it was somewhat of a disappointment. You know, this was a dream that I had for so long. And then when I got out of school, and at the time, this was 1983, there really weren't that many women in law school.
Sure. You also, that hill was tilted even more so for you.
Yeah, it definitely was. It definitely was. But,
and, even then, too, the law schools, this is partly why this podcast exists. I bet they didn't teach you a lot about how to start your own solo practice.
Oh, no, nothing. Yeah.
Which I think I've said this before many times, I think it borders on educational malpractice. Mm-hmm. Because law schools have to understand that in many cases, going into private practice, solo or small firm practice, it could for some people be the only option they have to try and recover those expenses that they paid out for that education. And to not prepare them for that is, to me, just abominable. But I'll hop off my soapbox once again and let you continue to share with us your journey.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I didn't know anything about business. I didn't know anything about accounting. I didn't know anything about hiring. I didn't know. I knew how to dissect a case. Yeah. If you needed to dissect a case, you know, I knew how to argue a case, but I didn't know any of the practicalities, and I didn't have any real education on how to interview. I didn't know how to go to an interview or what to say, or, you know, and as I said, most of my friends in law school were all really, really smart. They got out and they got jobs right away. So I was kind of like, well, all right, I got to figure this out here. So I did. I started my practice in Towson at a very small firm, and I was in an environment with a number of other attorneys. So we all shared ideas and we were all kind of getting started together. I did align myself with, I guess he's chief judge. I think he's chief judge Joe Murphy now. I think, gosh, I should have checked that. Great guy. He was in practice with Russ White. And I don't know if you recognize those names. They were kind of the criminal gurus back then.
Okay.
So they sent me quite a bit of work. I did a lot of, appellate writing for them. I did some courthouse or jailhouse interviews, you know, I pretty much took everything that nobody else wanted. And I worked for the public defender's office as a panel attorney. So I did that for about 5 years, maybe 4 or 5 years. Really, honestly, was not growing. Practice wasn't growing. I was working part-time in some other positions just to kind of make ends meet. At the same time, my dad is a doctor, a physician, and my brother started a business. I guess it was about when I got out of law school, and it was they manufactured and produced and manufactured a diet product for very obese people mm-hmm. who were, and the products were sold to doctors and hospitals, but primarily doctors around the country. And it was, you know, their business was growing. And in, I think it was 86 or 87, Oprah Winfrey came out on stage with her little red wagon, full fat. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, I'm really dating
myself. And she, you know, she had lost a ton of weight. And she said, "I lost weight on X diet." Well, they were our competitors. And they, it was a very, very large company. It was Sandoz Pharmaceutical that she had lost, that they developed the product that she had lost the weight on. They just couldn't handle the volume that came after that from her coming out on stage and saying this. And so they turned all their business over to us pretty much. It was just incredible. It was a windfall that nobody could ever foresee. It was incredible.
Indoctrinated to the entrepreneurial lifestyle then pretty quickly after having graduated from law school.
I did, because after about 5 years and my dad and my brother's business was growing, they said to me, "Look, you know, you're not making any money doing what you're doing. You're still working as a cocktail waitress and going, you know, and doing and working, you know, 20 hours a day. Why don't you come work with us?" So I did. So I closed my practice. And about the same time, my mother had just passed. And I thought, you know what? I always wanted to be a lawyer, but I can use my law degree in this business. So
in other ways, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, in other ways.
Because there's lots of definitions for being a lawyer. You know, I think we now know that, those of us who've done other endeavors, but it is kind of confining to think that the only way to be an attorney is to practice in the courtroom. And obviously that's far from the reality.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would encourage anyone to go to law school. I think it does teach you a great way to think and dissect up an issue or a problem. I think you can use it, you know, in just about any aspect of business, whether it's, you know, insurance or real estate or starting your own business. So it really did help. And when I went into the family business, which was called Jason Pharmaceuticals, named after my brother, whose name is James and Son. So my dad mm-hmm. put it together and he was like, "Oh, let's call it Jason." So I went into business and with them as the legal counsel. And then I guess I was there about 10 years and the company just grew and grew and grew and grew. It was just, and very quickly, it was an incredible time. It was a lot of fun. You know, I got to work with my dad and my brother every single day, who I just, you know, adore.
Well, that sounds like a perfect environment. So then how did you then transition back to the legal space?
Well, we sold the business to a public company in 1995. And about the same time, I had just gotten married and I had one small child and another one on the way, so to speak. I adopted a child in 96. So, and he was a little bit older. So I had two children that at that point that were about, you know, 6 years old, 6 or 7 years old. And so I just decided to do the mom thing and really enjoyed that for quite a while. So then, you know, the best thing about working at Jason through Medifast was that I learned, as I eventually became the executive vice president. So I learned everything. You know, I learned accounting. I learned sales and marketing. I had part of operations. I had part of manufacturing. So I really had became a much more well-rounded person in terms of my business acumen. So after my kids got a bit older, then I decided to, you know, take on a couple new entrepreneurial businesses. I started what would you call it? It was like the first internet sports radio station. And it was in 2000. It was way back before anybody was even on the internet. It was a sports radio station. It was called On Air Sports. And then, and we had a bunch of, you know, it was talk radio. It was sports talk radio on the internet before anybody even really listened to us. We couldn't really monetize it. We had a few sponsors, but we had some great hosts. We had, I guess it was Mark Messina, who was Mike. I don't know. It's either Mike or Mark, one of them, and a bunch of the guys that are still on the sports radio station. It used to be WNST. I don't know what it is now. But we did that for a while. And then I started another company called On Air Productions. And we produced, what did you call it back then? They were email. It was email marketing primarily for dealerships. And they were interactive emails before anybody did any of that either.
Today's episode is brought to you by the team at Spotlight Branding. If you've been throwing money at Google and you haven't been happy with the casework you're attracting, it's time to switch up your marketing strategy. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of legal marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel and push you to spend thousands on pay-per-click ads. Instead, they work with solo and small law firms to stay top of mind with your network to increase referrals, which we all agree are the best kind of clients. To help show you how to do that, they are giving away a free copy of their new book, The Ultimate Solo Lawyer's Guide to More Referrals and Better Clients. This book is a great tool for entrepreneurial-minded attorneys like the listeners of The Law Entrepreneur because it provides a framework to help you build a well-oiled marketing machine that positions you as an expert in your field and creates consistent referrals for your business. The Spotlight Branding team believes in this way of marketing so much that they are giving away free copies of their new book to lawyers across the country. To claim your copy, just go to spotlightbranding.com/guide and fill out a short form with your contact information. Spotlight Branding, a better way to market your law practice. But you eventually got to what you're currently doing, de novo service of process.
Yeah.
Tell us so about after those, how that came.
How I got there. Okay. So a few years later, those businesses, we kind of came and went. It was somewhat of a humbling experience. So a few years later, one of my friends who was an attorney in the default field, he represented, mortgage servicers, and this was around 2008 when everything was crazy. Actually came to me and said, we need someone to start a process serving company because we're spending a gazillion dollars a year on process serving, and we would like to see if you would, be interested in starting a business with us. And another one of the businesses we had prior to that was a court messenger business, and we also had a lending business where we lent money to attorneys, clients, PI clients who were pending settlement checks. So we had kind of kept our foot in the legal field. So when this friend came to me, I said, I don't know anything about process serving. I do know business. Let's try it. And they were primarily our only client for about 2 years. And I mean, it was like...
So describe what the business then is.
So the business, we serve process. It's pretty simple. We serve process for around the country, primarily still for the default industry, tax liens, mortgage foreclosures, and whatnot. But we also work for, domestic attorneys and PI attorneys. But our largest clients are in the default industry. But what we really do, what we've morphed into is helping our clients grow and helping them create referrals among each other. Because now that we've been in business about 10 years, this is actually my second, de novo is my second process serving company. The first one I sold. So it's really been more than 10 years. So now what I've seen through all of this is that, referrals are lawyer to lawyer referrals are an incredible source of business for our clients. So now that we have, 1,000 plus clients around the country, what we really try to do is put our clients together in different practice areas or in different locations where they might not be able to, they may have a client that comes to them, but they can't handle their case for whatever reason. So We really look at our clients as like partners.
So basically, DeNova Service does process service around the country, but concurrent with that, has a robust referral directory.
That's right.
And what's the advantage of having a nationally based process server resource? Because you know, there's process servers in every town and county around the country. I will tell you that half the traffic on attorney listservs are who knows a process server in this county or this jurisdiction or this area. So I can see why a nationally based company like yours might have some advantages, but are there others?
Well, I think the biggest advantage is that we have a national clientele and that we can put people together. So if I have a client in California that has a PI case in Baltimore, we connect these people together so they can for referrals, for more business. It's all about, with attorneys to me, it's all about getting, so competitive out there now, getting more business, creating a niche, and on the other hand, saving time. I see these, we work with a lot of paralegals that just, there's incredible inefficiencies in law firms still. And I think one of the things, to answer your question about having a national process serving company, is you have one point of contact. You have, one bill. You have one source that you call or email. We don't get many calls that you email and say, hey, I need to serve somebody in Puerto Rico. I need to serve somebody in Hawaii. I need to serve somebody in anywhere, even worldwide. And it saves time.
Yeah, I can see if you have a practice that is stretched. I can see if you have a practice that's stretched out across jurisdictions and maybe even states, where that would be a real advantage to being able to work with one vendor. But within, how about within your local jurisdiction? There has to be, I would think, something that sets your service apart from, say, the other process server down the street. What might that be?
I know, other than the fact that we are completely automated, we are a green company, paperless. We try to show and teach our clients to mimic what we do, efficiencies. Our operations director is, Six Sigma certified. So, creating efficiencies within your company is how you save time. And when you save time, you save money. We would ideally like to have our clients be able to eliminate, one or two employees by working with us. Because not only do we provide process serving and referrals, we also do things like find employees for our clients. Like I have a client right now, I'm trying to help him find a law clerk or help them. It's a lot of connect them with an attorney on demand service that we've partnered with, or connecting them with an auctioneer that we've partnered with. So we vet out a whole series of partners so our client doesn't have to. So we're kind of like their listserv. They come to us and say, hey, do you know an auctioneer in Montgomery County? Yes, right. We have that list and they're approved. They're vetted from us.
How do you keep all that information straight? Are you, in terms of your referral network, do you have a big database, or is it just connections that get repeated over and over again so that you're familiar with them? How does one go sort that out?
Well, the referral network, the directory is actually online. So you can, an attorney can go there and type in the location they're looking for a referral and what type of specialty or practice, and it'll come up with a list of attorneys in that area.
Yeah, so it is a database. It's an online database.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Online database.
And mm-hmm. you mentioned the fact that you were green and you do it, paperless. How does that work in terms of a process server? Are you getting the summons scanned and sent to you electronically, and your process server works with that?
Oh yeah, yes. Everything. You'd be surprised. We over the years, we've taught our clients, don't mail these things to us. Don't send us, 50, 100, 200 pages in the mail. Just email them to us. It's much simpler. It's safer. We have a secure portal. And then when we get them, we have, we print them and we have to print them out to serve, obviously.
Sure. Yeah.
But everything's saved, digitally. And we also have like an online portal so our clients can go to the portal and see exactly where their papers, where their job stands, how many attempts there have been made. They can pull out their invoices, they can pull up their affidavits. So, it's all about ease of use. Nobody's got time to deal with process serving.
When I was doing personal injury work, one of the things that was kind of interesting, I always thought of it as more investigative, was actually finding the defendant. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you had a name or a partial name, or you had some information about the license plate or the insurance company, what have you. And there was some detective work to try and go about and find where that defendant resided so that you could actually bring the lawsuit initially the claim through the insurance company, but possibly eventually the lawsuit. Do you provide mm-hmm. that service as well?
We do. It's called skip tracing.
Okay.
So yeah, we subscribe and are approved by a number of, national databases, that secure information on just about anybody and everybody. So,
yeah, I know that for me, it was just one of my little guilty pleasures. I kind of enjoyed doing that, but I did recognize that that's not really where I should be spending my time. And if I could, say, hey, Susan, can you find this defendant for me and get me a good address? It probably would have been time well spent.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a rabbit hole. You can definitely go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I guess one of the things is I'd like to tell my clients, and I hope that my clients understand that, yes, we are a vendor, just like their bank or their accountant. They need to partner with their vendors. They need to use their vendors. I don't know any other way to put it. For sources of new business, I feel like all of my vendors should be giving me referrals, and I should be asking them for them. It's a mutual way to grow each other's practices. So I don't see that very, very many, attorneys do that. They just basically see us as a process as opposed to a partner.
You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. It's an interesting difference in perspective. I wonder if it's magnified by virtue of the fact that you work with so many different attorneys and firms that it lends itself to that kind of situation. If you were a different type of vendor, let's say you were providing software services to a law firm, it might not be the same opportunity to take advantage of those relationships.
Perhaps that's the case. But, yeah. Anybody that's providing services to your law firm probably has other law firms, that they're providing services to as well.
Well, yeah, you're right about that. So is that the primary way that you market the business and in terms of, and also how does that relate to your recollection of marketing your law firm? Are they similar in approach, or is it a different paradigm for de novo as opposed to your law practice, or are there similarities?
Well, when I was in practice, you really weren't allowed to market. I'm thinking back because I actually had done a television commercial. It aired, I think, once or twice, and then I closed my practice. Now, I would say it's very different. When we first started out, we marketed, I guess, in the traditional way. Like, we serve your papers faster. We're automated. You get an automated email every time the service is attempted. Here's our pricing. But now, there are a lot of good process servers out there, but that you got to ask for more than that. Mm-hmm. And so we like to look at how can we improve your practice, improving your practice. If you grow, we grow. So we market more around that, around the referrals. And, it does take some schooling, because some people look at us like, wait a minute, you're a process server. Why are you talking about referrals? Why are you talking about sending me business? Why are you talking about, sources for new clients? But that's the way we approach things, because that's what's best for our clients. Anybody can serve process in Maryland, at least, but not everybody can bring you new clients.
Well, it's a really interesting combination of services. And as you said, you may have started off as a process serving resource, you've morphed into something more than that. And really, I can see how the branding is really centered around creating a partnership with your clients. And that can only help to improve your opportunity for business down the road.
Mm-hmm. I think it does. I mean, it does set us apart. It just takes, a little education.
Sure.
And it takes a little understanding. But I think that it just is, I hear it from my clients all the time, how competitive it is now. And so you really have to find a new way or novel way to try to gain new clients.
Well, this certainly is a new approach, and I appreciate you taking the time to share it with us today. Susan, tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you had to offer today.
Thank you. I appreciate that. They can email me. I actually have a paper that I've written and kind of a checklist of the best methods to hire a vendor, vendor. But primarily process server. So it's kind of a good checklist. If they like to have that, they can email me at Susan, S-U-S-A-N, at de novo attorney services. I know it's really long. D-E-N-O-V-O attorneyservices.com. And that's the name of that website as well.
Okay, well, we'll have that in our show notes for those of our listeners who are in the car or on the treadmill. And again, if they want to get that checklist, all they have to do is ask, and you'll be happy to send it to them.
It'd be my pleasure.
Well, Susan, I want to, again, thank you for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Take care now.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Jurisdiction, and spotlight branding, make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.